Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Chris, here we are another week. What's top of mind?
Well, we talked about the stockings that are in my view, but like this is our last episode before Christmas. So everything's kind of getting locked in for the holiday season for me and getting some time not working and with family. So I know I have a light week next week. And when this goes, I'll be on vacation, hopefully skiing, although we don't have a lot of snow up in Flagstaff. But yeah, I have to say that's what's top of mind for me is just the Christmas holiday. How are you?
Yeah, same. It's, you know, it's always fun when family starts to come in town. Looking forward to all the good food, probably gaining 10 pounds or more, having to work that off. But yeah, it's just a fun time. You know, it's still going to be busy. We have the summit, the Smart Region Summit coming up on January 13th that we're still preparing for. I'm sure we'll talk about it in our further episodes. But yeah, it's just fun to be able to take a break, you know, for a little bit. So who's our guest today? How do you know him?
So it is Eric Caldwell. He's from an organization called Atlas for Cities. Once again, it's Power Social. I just heard great things about him and his background in cities and local government and central government. And then, I just reached out to him on social and he said he'd be here. So that's basically it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, no, looking forward to it. I did, you know, some background on the platform. Excited to hear about the story.
All right.
Should we bring him in?
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
All right, Eric, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Excited to be here.
Yeah,
we are too. We haven't heard about what you've been doing, so this will be fun. Well, why don't you start with some info about you, though? We found it builds rapport. People understand your background. And we just say, hey, what do you want our podcast audience to know about you as an individual and a little bit of your background before you got to where you're today? We'll get to Atlas for Cities soon and what that is.
Yeah, my background has largely been in local and state government for approximately 15 years. I held a number of roles with the state of California, County of San Diego, City of San Diego. Most notably at the City of San Diego, I was the Deputy Chief Operating Officer, Economic Development Director, an advisor to the mayor, Chief Sustainability Officer. Basically, anything in local government, any role, any service that local government provides, I probably know something about it.
You got the right person.
Yep.
Well, cool. So that helps. You know your way around cities. That's great. Knowing your way around the government. So let's talk about what should our audience know about your current role. You're the director of data strategy at Atlas for Cities. And let's also not assume that people know what the Atlas for Cities is. So help with that as well.
Yeah. Earlier this year, I made the transition from my career in government and moving back into the technology world, which I done previously in the past, made that transition, but now making it again. The Atlas for Cities is a social media platform for cities and counties. It's a platform where city and county leaders, you have to be a city or county leader to actually access the platform. You come onto the platform, and you can interact with peers from around the United States and in some cases the world. And the idea is to share information. So if you're at the city of Phoenix and you're running economic development and you've got a really good program that works well there, you can tell the world about it on the Atlas. And us here in San Diego, we can learn from you, copy it, and replicate that in another jurisdiction. We have about 3,500 cities and counties that participate on the platform, individuals, multiple individuals from those cities. It doesn't have to be just one person. But the whole idea is to help catalyze the government mission, allowing cities and counties to evangelize ideas.
That's terrific.
And what about your role as the data strategy? Just give a little context. We'll dig in more, but
yeah, absolutely.
The role itself to the community.
So any good social media business is also a data business, and we are constantly looking for additional data insights that we can provide to cities and counties. We also want to make the government procurement process easier for cities and counties as well. So a lot of what we do on the back end is working with vendors. The platform is free for cities and counties to participate, but we take a lot of the data and we de-anonymize it, or we anonymize it, and we provide insights to vendors as it relates to who is the right person in an organization for you to talk to. And we do that so that they can understand, if I sell a certain type of, you know, budgeting system, maybe it's not just the finance person that I should talk to. Maybe it's economic development professionals that are also interested in this type of technology. And that's the information that we provide to them. And it is a, I think, a revolutionary approach to solving the procurement challenges that have plagued local governments for years, where I remember when I was a city official, I get inundated a couple times a day with somebody trying to sell me something that I didn't need, didn't want, and wasn't even.
But you're not the increase in spam likeies coming to my cell phone.
So vendors love us because we're helping them understand who to talk to, and cities love it because we're helping to cut down the number of unsolicited,
gotcha,
poorly targeted solicitations they get.
That's awesome. Eric, that's great. I love your background. And I think what you're doing at Atlas is so necessary and needed right now. You know, the goal of the podcast was to help tell stories and share best practices, but it sounds like your platform is doing that incredibly intimately as well. So that's really excited to hear more about it. But let's back up just a step. You know, we always make this joke. This is a smart cities podcast. We've had a lot of fun asking our guests, what's their definition or view of a smart city? What's working, what's not, because we know there's not one answer. And it's been really interesting to see what people imagine or think about when they think of smart cities from their perspective. So we'd love to tell our audience, you know, what is your view of a smart city, and talk to us about what's working, what's not working, and maybe how Atlas fits in that.
Yeah. Well, first, I think it's important to maybe understand what's my definition of a city and what do cities do. And for me, you know, part of my background is both on the government side, but also went to business school and have that mindset as well. I see government, especially local government, as a service business. You know, you police streets, you pump water, you pave roads. Those are core services that you provide. So a smart city is one that leverages technology to improve its service delivery. You know, you think about all of the service companies that are out there, whether it's Amazon or other online retailers like Walmart, and the digital services that they provide to make it easy, almost too easy, for you to purchase things and have them delivered to you anywhere in the world. That's what smart cities is leveraging that technology to have that amazing experience in the service delivery that cities provide. I think what works really, really well is quite frankly, what this podcast is celebrating. First and foremost, it's you're starting to see those seeds of innovation bubble up inside of cities and counties around the country, where innovation was a bad thing in the city and county world, you know, maybe 20 years ago. Now it's seen as something that you should lean into. And I think that that's hugely important and a good change. I think the evangelism of ideas that comes about of that as well, whether it's this podcast or the work that we do at the Atlas, there's a community now of city leaders that are eager to share their ideas, to share their successes, to share their failures. I think some of the things that are probably not working all too well is, first and foremost, technology doesn't fix everything. So as we think about, you know, the problems that cities have, sometimes I've joked with people in the past, maybe the intern with the clipboard counting, you know, users is the easiest and most efficient way to do it. You know, the low tech solution might be the right solution instead of trying to have technology that's looking for problems to solve, you know, fixing that problem by getting the right amount of technology, I think, is something that a lot of communities still struggle with. Yeah. And then there's definitely an element of things that government just can't do, that tech firms can do. And so as you're looking to scale technology in the cities, you know, there's definitely a different rubric when it comes to privacy. There's different rubrics when it comes to the personnel that you can hire and what you can pay. And those are some differences as well.
It's awesome. Yeah, what a great definition. Very thorough. I love it. It's exactly right. It hits it all in the nail on the head. And sometimes it doesn't have to be a tech solution. But ultimately, it's about how do we improve the service delivery and make it much more efficient, more effective for our citizens and businesses. So love your perspective on that. So now let's dig back deeper into the data piece. I know, you know, you've got data strategy in your title, and you've talked a little bit about how you're leveraging data currently, specifically like for the vendor community on the back end. But is there anything else you'd like to kind of chat about how Atlas is leveraging data and turning it into a strategic asset and kind of where data is leading to change in cities from your perspective, or maybe, you know, in your past roles with the local governments?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, where the Atlas plays in this space is connecting city leaders as they reach the point at which they're looking for information, where they're trying to solve a problem, and identifying them at that moment and connecting them with the right resources that they need to solve that problem. And I think what we're hearing from Atlas users is often the solutions that are being presented to them are things that they didn't even know existed. You know, there's a solution to a problem maybe 10 years ago. You know, there wasn't technology that was off the shelf ready to go that can solve that particular problem, and now there is. So that's really the sweet spot for the Atlas. When we first started, we did all of that on platform. And now part of my role is to think about how do we pull more local government practitioners into our platform to connect them with those solutions using advertising and other technologies to make sure that they're aware that the Atlas exists, that the Atlas has the solution to the problem right at that very moment where, you know, they're doing that Google search or searching on other platforms for a solution to a particular problem.
Totally. And how is the model structured? Is it kind of one login per organization or per person, as long as they have a .gov kind of email address? How does it work for Atlas and like becoming part of the platform?
Yeah, so you go to the Atlas, the-atlas.com, and sign up. We do all, it's not just a .gov email. You can enter in your personal email, any email address. We will authenticate all users prior to granting them access to the platform. Sometimes that could be as simple as using the email address and seeing that it is a .gov email address. But if somebody uses a personal email address and maybe it's, you know, and they say, hey, you know, we're from the city of Chicago, it could be just as simple as having one of our staff log into the city of Chicago website, seeing that this person is really an employee. Awesome. And away we go.
And theoretically, if Chris or Dom at theurbancomplex.com were to sign up, I'm sure we'd be authenticated, right?
Oh, that's great. I mean, I absolutely love this idea. You know, I know we spoke just briefly beforehand about the Smart Region effort, and it was all just an idea to get these cities sharing best practices on a more regular basis, because you're right. When they know what else is out there in the ecosystem that's available to them, it just helps us accelerate, you know, innovation within our community. So, I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, leveraging Atlas when you're in search of that solution or you're faced with the challenge and you don't know where to go. Is there any other way you really foresee cities being able to lean into the platform and Atlas in general to help them, you know, advance their mission? Is there any, you know, any tips for people that might hear this now, go sign up? How would you like to see them really engage with Atlas?
Yeah, beyond signing up for the Atlas, it's definitely engaging on the platform, not just being a passive user. So asking questions, reaching out to counterparts that are on the platform. If you read a case study or engaging with material and you find it interesting, actually asking reaching out and asking questions about how it played out and getting more detail. And then also answering questions too. I remember, again, very fondly from my time in local government, of I never said no when another city, an official from another jurisdiction reached out and wanted to ask me questions or bounce ideas off of me. And the Atlas is just a platform that accelerates that information exchange. It's one of the things that I loved about local government is the openness. You know, there's very little IP in local government. Picking up an idea and moving it to another jurisdiction isn't just copying and pasting. They'll probably help you do it. And so that replication is what really gives us the warm and fuzzies at the Atlas when we see one jurisdiction taking an idea from the Atlas platform from another city and replicating it somewhere else. That's the whole reason why our co-founders created the Atlas.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, we've noticed that you highlight COVID research. We'll come to that in a minute because that seems pretty interesting because of the way you've structured there. But from your experience in San Diego or California or just what your users are doing, is there any research that you want to highlight just to give us a glimpse? We'll get to code in a minute, but like what are they doing that's really cool that if someone's listening and they hadn't heard about you, they're going to want to go find when they get in there?
I would say in if you're talking less about COVID and just about content in general,
yeah,
some of the coolest ideas on the Atlas are things that, you're really seeing a lot around public-private partnerships where cities and counties are partnering up with private businesses to do things in different ways. So a lot of the financing solutions that you're going to find, whether it's on our platform or just, you know, calling up neighboring cities and asking them how they're doing things. There's some really cool things that are going on with
public. And it's literally like a white paper around what worked and what to do, or is it the things to do as a template to create them, or is it actually the outcome? Like, or is it a mix? What's like?
There's both. So, you know, the approach at the Atlas is to let cities tell their stories and to do that through case studies. So
it's a lot of self-created content as well. Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Okay. Awesome.
Awesome. So tell us about the COVID research. I saw that you've got 2 years of data. What outcomes or observations would you like to share with those findings that you think will resonate with the urban complex?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, there's two big takeaways from what we're learning with COVID, and the COVID study is definitely, now that we've done this for 2 years, is backing this up. And that's for not just for the entire world, but definitely more so for government. The world of work is changing, and the way that services are being delivered in response to COVID is changing dramatically as well. So when you think about, you know, cities and counties being the backbone, you know, oftentimes I'll call cities and counties the operating system on which we run our lives. You know, they are that basic level service that keeps everything moving. So when everyone else went home, cities and counties had to continue to provide their services, and they had to figure out how to do that in many cases overnight. So all of the challenges that the private sector is dealing with in terms of remote work and whether or not to do remote and how you do remote, COVID cleaning protocols is a lot of what we saw in the first round of data. And now we're seeing more around, you know, how to educate and motivate a work force that's having to continue to work during the COVID environment. All of those things are just dramatically increased in terms of complexity when it comes to government and to the mix of government operations that are involved in service delivery. As an example of that, you know, separate and apart from the Atlas, when COVID first hit, I was deputy chief operating officer for the city of San Diego. And for better part of 5 years, myself, my predecessors have been talking about digitizing the development process in the city of San Diego. And the answer was always, we're about 2 years, it's a 2 year project and we're about 2 years out from it. COVID hit, and within 30 days, we had completely digitized the development service process, sent the vast majority of our employees into a work from home environment. And we did that in 30 days to continue service delivery. And I think what we're seeing in the COVID research data is that that type of an experience for cities is not an anomaly. That was the norm. And that cities and counties are still trying to figure it out. Nobody has all of the right answers. There's been successes, there's been failures, but that kickstart of innovation was something that you saw across a lot of different jurisdictions. And cataloging all of those on the Atlas platform so that you can learn from them. I would say that there's probably not a city, whether it was small or large, that would have said, hey, you could take an operation that's doing 100,000 permits on an annual basis and, you know, digitize it almost overnight, go from paper to completely online. And that's going to work well. That's something most cities would have said no to. And there's a lot of cities that ended up doing it.
That's awesome. What a good story.
Let's hope COVID didn't run you out of San Diego. And it was more just the opportunity of Atlas doing something different. But yeah.
2020 was a rough year.
Cool. Well, we do have two closing questions that we ask. We get some really diverse feedback on these. So hopefully you got some good ones for us. But we found, like, we asked, what help can we do? And to help you do more is in whether it's opening a door, whether it's someone listening here, what can they do to take action? If it's a connection that a type of industry or a company or something, maybe we know them. Just what might be of interest, or what problem you're trying to solve, and what ask do you have of us or who might be listening? That'd be helpful.
Yeah, really two things come to mind. One, we've talked about a lot, and I really appreciate all of the opportunities to plug the Atlas. You know, to the extent that folks are listening to this podcast and they are interested in evangelizing their ideas, learning from other cities, I would encourage them to join the Atlas community if they're not already members. Secondly, I really think that what you're doing here is super important in terms of taking this culture of innovation and all of these innovators that are sitting out there, many of whom are vocal, but many of whom aren't. They show up for work every day, they do their job, they're engaging in innovative activities, and creating a place where they can share their stories and ideas. That is hugely important, because one of the things that we see all the time in the data that we get from cities from the Atlas is that innovation is occurring all over the place, but there's still today, it's better than it was, but the amount of information exchange between cities is just lacking. So creating more opportunities and forums to do that like this is an amazing piece of work.
It's interesting. Some people don't even know what they're doing is innovative because they aren't out there, or they don't know that the simplest solution is in the city next door, and they don't have the channel to understand what it is, or the dialogue to bring it forward. So thanks for that. As we wrap up, we know Dom and I couldn't do it ourselves, and we've got folks that have helped us along the way. Is there anyone that you're particularly appreciative of that you'd like to recognize in your journey at this point? And selfishly, if by knowing who the urban complex is and what we're about, if you think they're a fit, let us know that as well while you go through.
Yeah, maybe a few people. First, Elle Hempen and Ellery Monks, the co-founders of the Atlas, for believing in me and taking a local government guy and recycling him into a tech entrepreneur and innovator. I'm super grateful that they took a risk on me and gave me that opportunity. Secondly, David Graham from the city of Carlsbad is the chief innovation officer, somebody that I've worked with over the better part of almost 20 years now, one of the most innovative people in government. If you haven't had an opportunity to meet him, I would definitely spend some time with David.
That's great to hear. I just met him the other day, and Dom's known him for a while, and he just may be a guest.
It'll be a good one.
Yeah.
Right on. Okay, well, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Eric Caldwell, Director of Data Strategy at the Atlas for Cities. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving, our why also continued to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, the whole approach was really revolving around what we call three C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
Okay, Dom, that was Eric Caldwell. What do you think?
Yeah, what a great guy. I really enjoyed the conversation. I loved his, you know, deep background in local and state government. And then to take that now into the tech entrepreneur side of the house, I thought it was great. And I mean, this goes to the heart of, you know, everything we're doing, everything that the Connect of Our Smart Region initiative here in Greater Phoenix is doing. It's this idea of governments helping governments and governments talking to each other, sharing best practices, sharing innovations, sharing failures. So that way we can all just learn from each other, grow and accelerate the development of tech that can help us improve our, you know, city services. So love the idea of the platform, love that it's free for government, and then love kind of what they're trying to do on the back end by helping reduce the number of cold calls or cold emails, spam emails that we give. I know that in Brent in City of Scottsdale loves to quote the number. I believe he had like 30 by 9 a.m. one day. And so I know it's a major issue.
So hopefully he's actually doing what he's saying and not open the door.
But yeah, what'd you think?
Yeah, no, I heard a statement that I hadn't heard before. I mean, obviously we've talked about the difference between transacting service and engagement, but I thought Eric said this quote, cities and counties are the operating system by which we run our lives. Oh, that's a powerful statement. And it wasn't surprising to hear what COVID did to change how they need to operate and what they thought of. And yeah, just kind of cool that they could use that to digitize the development process and servicing of that process digitally, super quick. Love the fact that he's also focused on procurement and making that happen. And kind of cool that we may get invited to be part of this and see for ourselves and find more people writing cool stuff in there and then seeing about getting them on the show. That'd be fun. Yeah. So there's a lot to this. And I love that they don't look at us as competition for eyeballs, because the more channels that are out there, you could tell he's very appreciative to be on the show and just get the message out. It's just hard. It's a space that's a little noisy.
Well, yeah, you made a good point, and because I've heard this quite often from a lot of our local city managers and mayors. It's local government's almost like open source, right? They're not, while they do compete technically around economic development and stuff like that, sometimes I'll admit, but you know, they're all about sharing, especially if they are something that's worked. And so this is just a good vehicle, good mechanisms for more cities to share that kind of open source. Hey, if we did it, you don't have to struggle through it. You just learn from us. So it's good.
Sounds good. So we'll do our part and follow up with what he said. So I guess it's www.the-atlas.com to sign up, put your email address in there. Hopefully you have a way to use your gov. It's probably the easiest. But it sounds like there's lots of ways they'll validate you should be on there. So
yeah, this is going to be great.
Well, Dom, I think you have an article today for Cracks in the Pavement. What'd you find?
Yeah, no, it's just interesting because I was scrolling through Cities Today website and they have an article about blockchain cities prepare for impact. And they just, it's an article because I've heard more and more the blockchain conversation seems to be gaining speed again. It kind of did, you know, not in the not too distant past, but now it seems to be gaining more speed. And they just talk about, you know, viewing it as a fundamental shift that they cannot ignore. And so I just, you know, I thought it was a good article that once again talks about this technology more in depth, how cities are looking at it, preparing for it. So if you're a city, if you're running a smart city initiative and you don't even know what blockchain is or need more information on what blockchain is and what cities are doing, this article I thought was really good and just kind of, again, bringing it back to light, because I do think that it might be something that they can't ignore. And so how are you going to best prepare for it?
You know, one thing that sticks out at me is this quote. This is from Diego Fernandez, City of Buenos Aires. I love it. It says, honestly, governments are quite stupid. How many times have you been to a government office and they ask you for another piece of paper or a document that the same government issued? That's crazy. And he says the goal is 80% of the interactions with the city won't ask residents for information that it already holds. That's super easy if you move it to digital, but yet you still get asked for your same credentials when you go between portals and stuff. So that's been a pet peeve of mine. Yeah, so I'm just a little skeptical it has to be on blockchain. I mean, there's other ways to secure great databases and have amazing experiences, but that's not to say. I mean, blockchain's nascent. A lot of people are putting their time and energy into it. Separately, there's been a lot of focus on the coins themselves, Miami Coin, New York Coin, even El Salvador. Amazing. Their president has tied a bunch of their economy to Bitcoin. And in fact, one of my colleagues is El Salvador, and she went there right around Thanksgiving. They gave every single citizen in the country a wallet, and they put money in tied to blockchain. And I mean, she did say they just all went and spent it. They didn't really understand to keep it and hold it and any of that. But you know, you gotta love the innovative ways that folks are trying to do something. We'll see what comes. If you can digitize something back to that city OS type of thing and actually make it serve and make it easier and take away friction, that's a good thing. It's just whether it's Bitcoin or whether it's blockchain or not, you can still digitize contracts. You can still digitize credentials. You can still authenticate. But we'll see. You know, a lot of great talent putting into this Web 3.0 movement, and we'll see where it leads.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It kind of goes back to something Eric said. It's right. They thought they would never digitize their building permit process, but then they did it in 30 days. You wonder if this might be one of those things as well. It's like, oh, we'll never be on blockchain. We'll never do blockchain. And then all of a sudden, you know, maybe
we'll never have a token. But yet then, but that's the thing that it also concerns me a little bit that, I mean, if every city has their token, then what happens between cities? And it's like, it's kind of some of the stuff we've talked about in our region. Like, we have to make a seamless existence. And it's like, I don't know, back in the, you know, conversion to buggies to cars, I heard there was like 700 car manufacturers or something like that in the United States alone. And like, it just doesn't work like that. You can't have consistency and seamless experience if everyone's doing it themselves. So a little bit of that concerns me too, but I don't know. We'll see.
Awesome. Cool stuff.
Either way, that's a wrap, everyone. Have a great Christmas, and we will talk to you next week. See ya.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.